Today on Annenberg Radio News.
There's nothing more exciting than 300 musicians just giving it everything they've got and just lighting up the Coliseum.
We learn how the USC marching band gets ready for game day. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 16th, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. Speculation about whether LAUSD Superintendent John Daisy would resign is over. Daisy handed in his resignation this morning by issuing a joint statement with the school board. Former LAUSD head Ramon Cortinez has been named as his interim replacement. We have reactions to the resignation from South Los Angeles. But first, Taylor Haney reports that the battle to fill Daisy's spot permanently has already begun.
United Teachers Los Angeles held a press conference today calling for transparency in the process of selecting the next superintendent. Daisy's tenure has been marked by improved graduation rates along with missteps in the district's iPad program and scheduling fiascos in South LA schools. But union president Alex Caputo Pearl wouldn't comment on any of that. Instead, he pointed to the union's philosophical differences with Daisy.
The new superintendent is going to have to believe in shared decision-making and is going to have to invite all stakeholders to the table to shape how public education works in Los Angeles.
Caputo Pearl would not say who they'd like to be the next permanent superintendent. He only reiterated what the union wants for LA schools: smaller class sizes, better pay, and
we want a teacher evaluation, development, and support method that actually works and respects teachers as professionals. We want a well-rounded curriculum with art, music, ethnic studies, and other courses. And we want an end to the unjust system of teacher jail.
Daisy himself covered none of the district's problems in a written statement today. He said he resigned because he is exhausted and wants to stop neglecting his health and his family. Mayor Garcetti thanked Daisy for his service in a separate statement and cited rising test scores during Daisy's three-year tenure. An LA Unified official said the board voted 6-1 in favor of Daisy stepping down and unanimously agreed to bring in LAUSD veteran Ray Cortinez for the interim position. He'll start next week, leading the country's second-largest school district. The district said Daisy will remain on the payroll on special assignment for the rest of the year, but did not elaborate. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
I'm Rebecca Gibeon, reporting on Daisy's resignation from South LA. The word of Daisy's resignation spread quickly. Who leads the Los Angeles Unified School District, the second biggest district in the nation, is very important to a community that faces so many educational problems. South LA is home to some of the lowest performing schools in California, has one of the highest concentrations of charter schools in the nation, and some of the lowest graduation rates. Take Manual Arts High School. In 2012, Manual Arts had a graduation rate of about 65% and a dropout rate of about 26%. Daisy has been credited with raising graduation rates, and in his first year, Manual Arts' graduation rate did increase by a little over 1%. Manual Arts only scores a 3 out of 10 on the state's unofficial rankings of statewide test scores. Students at Manual Arts have an idea of what the next superintendent should be like.
Someone who has some control over budget, because right now my AP history, my AP US history, the most recent book we have is, I think it was 2007.
That's Nicholas Navario, a student at Manual Arts. He thinks that his school needs a renovation, and he hopes that the new superintendent will help get the budget for that. Senior Andy Serrano also has some ideas for quick fixes that the superintendent can work on.
A better, cleaner restrooms. Okay, I know the food is healthy, but like it kind of tastes better food. And then like not so many classes, because then you get, you know, too much homework. And it, you know, students don't like that.
Serrano also believes the superintendent should be a good leader.
A good role model, someone that acts like how they say they act.
Former student Martha Anglo has a niece at Manual Arts High. She echoes Serrano's statement. She hopes the future superintendent will work hard for the community.
Whatever he says he's going to do, enforce it. Don't say you're going to do one thing and don't do anything. Don't say you're going to do something and don't give a rat's butt about it. If you're going to do it, stick to what you say you're going to do.
Rebecca Gibeon, Annenberg Radio News.
And just this afternoon, after the superintendent resigned, civil rights attorneys are stepping in to fix the scheduling problems of Fremont and Dozy High School. The American Civil Liberties Union and the Public Council found students at the two LA public schools to be enrolled in courses they have already taken and not being academically challenged. The intervention comes after state and local officials were ordered to fix the same problems at Jefferson High School. The state board passed a $1.1 million bill earlier this week so schools like Fremont and Dozy can get the resources they need. Millions worldwide learned how to drop, cover, and hold on this morning. At 10:16, the Great Shakeout Earthquake Drill taught people how to stay safe during big earthquakes. Earthquake seismologist Dr. Lucy Jones presented a plan on how to deal with these natural catastrophes.
We need to help train people because what you do during the earthquake will determine a lot of your safety. Your instinct is to run out, but that's not the safest thing to do.
Affordable housing projects also concern Jones. The LA Building Department has proposed refitting wood in thousands of older apartments in preparation for shakes. Los Angeles has about 6,000 buildings that need to be remodeled. Covered California officials hoped to make signing up for health insurance easier this year. The agency faced widespread criticism during its first enrollment period last year. Director Peter Lee says they are making a number of improvements, including a better website and instant payment option. Open enrollment begins again on November 15th. The state-run health insurance exchange says it also plans to employ more than three times as many operators as last year, with expanded hours and greater outreach to African American and Latino communities. California's prison population is consistently one of the largest in the country. It's no surprise that overcrowding is an issue. Courts ruled in 2009 that extreme overcrowding violates the constitutional ban on cruel and unusual punishment. A federal court gave California until 2016 to lower its prison population. This deadline has been extended several times. In November, voters will be asked whether to approve Prop 47, which, as Belinda Kai reports, could help reduce the prison population.
Proposition 47 would prevent many low-level offenders from being put behind bars. Nonprofit Community Coalition in South LA is a strong supporter of the initiative. Karen Lane is the organization's Prevention Network Director.
The initiative will actually help reform our criminal justice system by reclassifying six nonviolent, non-serious misdemeanors, including drug use as well as petty theft, from felonies or wobblers to misdemeanors.
This will affect about 10,000 inmates serving a sentence for any low-level offenses. This includes possession of drugs and shoplifting. Officials will conduct a thorough review of the inmate's criminal history and assess a prisoner's likelihood of reoffending before resentencing.
The savings from prison spending will be redirected. 65% will go to mental health and drug treatment. 25% will go to K-12 programs for at-risk youth. And the remaining 10% will go to services for victims of crime.
Freddie Torres, a youth organizer with Community Coalition, has been working to get Prop 47 passed.
And so I think it's really powerful work, and I think the youth really connect to it because they're very familiar with the school to prison pipeline and really putting an end to that. And so the youth feel that this is really a step closer to ending that cycle.
Lane says that the community will see immediate benefits if the proposition passes.
I think immediately what we will see, one, is folks who are currently home who have these convictions on their record, and right now they're felony convictions. This would make their records now reflect a misdemeanor, which will open up a lot of opportunities for a lot of families in our neighborhood, especially in South Los Angeles. Felony convictions create a barrier to employment opportunity, financial aid, housing opportunities. And so if folks can actually remove those felony convictions from their records, it will open up a lot of opportunities for folks to actually thrive in our neighborhoods and thrive in the state of California.
The measure is opposed by several district attorneys and law enforcement groups. They believe these crimes are not minor and that the initiative will release dangerous criminals onto the streets. Belinda Kai, Annenberg Radio News.
California will probably see some extra rain and snow this winter, but it isn't likely to be enough to end the state's crippling drought. That's the prediction out today from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. California is now in its third year of drought, with 2013 being the driest year on record. Scientists fear that without an increase in rainfall, the Dust Bowl-sized mega droughts of California's past could come again. Looks like a string of gorgeous fall days and pleasant nights for Los Angeles. The rest of the evening looks clear with a light breeze and a temperature of 60 degrees. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with 73 degrees and 61 in the evening. Saturday, USC homecoming day, will be partly cloudy again with a high of 73, coming down to a low of 61 degrees in the evening. Sunday will be a bright 75 degrees, cooling to a clear 60 by nightfall. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear from one expert about how the news media is covering Ebola. Only about 6% of employees at major tech companies are Hispanic. To help balance out the workplace, the Society for the Advancement of Chicanos, Latinos, and Native Americans in Science, otherwise known as SACNAS, held a conference today. Diana Crandall went to downtown Los Angeles to check out the event.
At the conference, SACNAS held panels, discussions, and forums with the aim of creating networking and research opportunities for minority students. Dr. John Matsui, Assistant Dean of Biology at UC Berkeley, says employment disadvantages for minorities and women start early.
They begin in the public school system that is highly under-resourced. And so when they arrive at the university or at the college, it's an unlevel playing field.
Matsui also says that students need to be nurtured in the classroom rather than weeded out. For students who couldn't attend the conference, SACNAS holds two regional meetings during the spring and have several chapters throughout the United States that meet year-round. Diana Crandall, Annenberg Radio News.
Despite declines in TV viewership, CBS remains the most watched network in the country, banking on popular shows like The Big Bang Theory and NCIS. That may be why the network is now giving viewers the chance to stream its live programming without a TV set. ARN's Christian Brown tells us more.
If the realm of digital TV subscriptions was a poker game, CBS just went all in. The network announced today that it will grant viewers access to its live feed and hundreds of TV shows for a monthly subscription of $5.99 a month. That means more episodes of Survivor for fans.
1 year ago, Survivor, Blood versus Water...
and a new revenue stream for CBS.
The walls are coming down.
That's Mary Murphy, former news producer at Entertainment Tonight and senior lecturer at USC Annenberg.
The CBS executives have been talking about changing the way they distribute television for at least 10 years, and they finally have arrived at a solution. This, coupled with the HBO announcement yesterday, really does signal, you know, the new age of web-delivered television.
HBO's standalone service, which is set to begin next year, is another example of the growing trend of consumer choice television, inspired by services like Hulu and Netflix. A. Michael Knoll, an expert in telecommunications and digital television, says the move by CBS and other TV channels could spell doom for traditional cable.
The solution to that would be for the cable company to unbundle and get a little bit more flexible in its pricing strategy. The other option is for the provider go to the source, in other words, completely bypass the cable company and go directly to the source, be it, you know, a studio or be it a local affiliate of CBS or NBC or ABC, and go directly to them and get the video I want to watch.
CBS's streaming service, which was aptly named All Access, may just be the trump card it needs to stay relevant in the future of a la carte TV. Christian Brown, Annenberg Radio News. Began
Dolls develop tools, we built a wall.
We built the pyramids. Math, science, history, unraveling the mystery.
The two nurses who contracted Ebola at a hospital in Dallas have raised new questions about hospital safety. As fears of the virus increase, LA hospitals are taking new measures. Gabrielle Cortez reports.
Hospitals across the country are rethinking their approach to Ebola, and LA County USC Medical Center is no exception. Over 150,000 patients walk through the hospital's doors each year, making it one of the busiest medical facilities in the city. With that level of volume, it's not surprising the hospital has decided to prepare to treat a patient infected with Ebola. Today, county health officials and union representatives gather to announce what measures and protocols the hospital has created to treat someone with the deadly virus. Dr. Christina Galley of LA County Department Health Services says the facilities are ready.
We do know that we have sufficient personal protective equipment located in all LA County DHS facilities, including a high supply of that equipment located in emergency departments and urgent cares where it's most likely that a patient with Ebola would present.
Fears of Ebola in the United States surfaced when a man infected with the virus traveled from Liberia to Dallas, where he developed symptoms and died. Since his death, two of the nurses who treated him have since contracted the virus. Health officials had previously downplayed concerns about Ebola spreading in the United States. However, the events in Dallas have created new questions about hospital preparedness across the country. LA County USC Medical Center has put together a team of volunteer nurses who are ready to treat a patient infected with Ebola. It has also set aside an isolation room.
That room and the ward, the general ward, was identified and selected on a number of different criteria. The ability to easily transport patients into it, the ability to very tightly isolate a patient, the availability, for example, of a bathroom in the unit, so in the room itself, so a patient doesn't have to leave the room to be able to use the restroom.
Officials stressed there is no suspicion that any cases of Ebola in Los Angeles exist. Still, it's unclear how the spread of the virus in the United States will unfold. As healthcare workers continue to follow the story, all they can do is prepare. Gabriel Cortez, Annenberg Radio News.
After seeing the explosion of Ebola coverage in the media, I, for one, have definitely taken notice. I wonder how much the round-the-clock coverage is affecting people's fears. I spoke to senior scholar Roy Peter Clark at the Poynter Institute, who believes the media coverage of Ebola is both necessary and comprehensive. First of all, you know, the whole world is looking at this Ebola media coverage, especially on television. Do you think that the media is being responsible?
I haven't seen many examples of attempts to sort of exaggerate the risk. What I've seen is many examples of the media working hard to create not just a responsible report, but one that is in the sort of the highest interests of public health and security.
Does it present a big risk to the United States of America?
The question of how big a risk the Ebola virus is hugely important. And I think it's fair to say that we're in some uncharted territory, as we are when many other kinds of new infections and diseases become sort of introduced into a country by whatever path.
Okay, so, in circumstances like this, you feel that the media is basically doing an adequate job.
I've been impressed by the examples of coverage that I've seen on television, in the newspapers, on public radio, where I've heard some outstanding reporting. And what I hear that I like best of all are journalists asking very good set of questions about what's been happening in Texas, what's happening in parts of Africa, what's happening in airports.
Do you think this type of story warrants the 24/7 coverage that it's getting?
Well, you know, how shall I say this? I've seen many, many stories on, especially on cable news networks, that I didn't think warranted, you know, another single minute of coverage that have gone on for weeks and weeks and months and months.
Right.
Here we have something that has international consequences, that that has some direct, however limited, impact on the American population and culture, not just in terms of what we're going to do here to help our own citizens, but what we're going to do to help other people in other places in the world. So I would say yes, that given all of the crap we cover in the media across the board, it's an important reminder of the powerful role that journalists need to play in truly important stories.
That was the Poynter Institute's Roy Peter Clark. This Saturday, it's homecoming. The USC Trojan football team will take on the Colorado Buffaloes at the Coliseum. And the Trojan marching band will welcome back alumni members to their halftime show. We visited the band's practice this week and got a glimpse inside their spirited rehearsals.
We are on Cromwell Field, home of the Spirit of Troy, three times a week, or four times including Saturdays.
Homecoming this week!
It's homecoming, so that's very exciting. We've got Silks and Woodwinds coming back. We've got the original Tusk Band, who recorded on the soundtrack in Dodger Stadium, coming back. It's very exciting, huge game, coming off of a great win against Arizona, so we're looking forward to it. So generally when we start practice, we start in sectionals where each individual instrument gets into their groups. Then right now what's going on is we pull the whole band together and we focus on just the musical aspect of the performance. Then once we're done doing this, we'll go out on the field and we'll start marching.
Here we go, one, two, one, two, three, and go. Easy!
Saturday morning, we have practice at 6:30 a.m. We're usually there until 10 or so. We have to line up at Heritage 2 hours before kickoff, and we're not sitting down for the entire game. Like, we're marching to the Coliseum, and then we're in the stands, standing and cheering for the team the entire time, and then we march back in cadence. It's definitely exhausting, but it's also a lot of fun because everyone has a lot of energy, and it's game day, and, like, everyone's here, and the alumni are back cheering us on.
Being on the field is a really thrilling experience because you're performing in front of 90,000 people and you just step out there and you're on the same field that the players play on, you're on the same field as everyone, and it's just really exciting.
There's nothing more exciting than 300 musicians just giving it everything they've got and just lighting up the Coliseum.
This sound portrait was produced by Maureen Lee Lenker. Justin Simeon wrote, directed, and produced the new satirical comedy film, Dear White People. It opens in theaters in L.A. tomorrow. USC's African American Cinema Society hosted a screening and Q&A. Maya Williams was there and gave us her reaction.
I arrived an hour before the theater doors were set to open for a screening of Dear White People. A line had already snaked around the perimeter of the lobby. Word of mouth surrounding the film has sizzled for more than 2 years. The provocative concept trailer first premiered in the summer of 2012 to millions of views.
This fall, in the tradition of The Help, The Blind Side, and The Butler, comes a new film.
How come the only black movies Hollywood wants to make are ones with black mammies in fat suits?
Or black women in pain, man.
So basically, we got black people dying in the past and black people dying in the present.
Dear White People follows a group of black students at a liberal arts college who struggle to stand out in the crowd. While doing so, they face stereotypes, parental pressure, and self-imposed expectations. Justin Simien and his team sought backing from big Hollywood studios, but faced near-constant rejection. To appease movie executives, Simien reworked the script into multiple formats. At one point, he even wrote a made-for-TV version. But the final version of the film draws inspiration from Spike Lee's classic Do the Right Thing. Like Lee's film, Dear White People has five acts, each one focusing on a specific character's story. This artistic choice takes us on an interwoven journey.
I read your entire 15-page unsolicited treatise on why the Gremlins is actually about suburban white fear of black culture.
The Gremlins are loud, talk in slang, are addicted to fried chicken, and freak out when you get their hair wet.
As of today, Dear White People has a remarkable 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. The film is provoking, hilarious, disturbing, and all around deeply entertaining. Dear White People can be seen in theaters in LA and New York starting this Friday. Maya Williams, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City!
So we're going to Tito's Tacos, and we're taking the 10 West.
Continue on our 10 West for 7 miles.
Let's update the 10 Santa Monica Freeway now, courtesy of Scott Burke, KNXR 1070.
I'll turn a little 405-2. The 10 is looking great. No problems through Mid-City and downtown.
Take the I-405 South exit. Take the exit toward Venice Boulevard.
Traffic wasn't so bad today. Typically, if we would have left a couple hours earlier or a few hours later, we would have been here a lot later.
Sonic City!
Now we check in with Eric Rubel to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Priyanka. Jury selection has begun in the case of two USC graduate students killed in 2012. Facebook created a new feature to help you communicate with family and friends in case of a disaster. And Snapchat has started a new USC story, what students are posting. All coming up on ATVN at 6 on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Eric. And now it's time for an update on what's happening in sports with Evan Budrovich. Welcome, Evan.
Thanks, Priyanka. The USC Trojans officially begin the second half of their season here on homecoming weekend. The Trojans want to bolt out of the gate strong and not rely on late-game heroics to squeeze out a win against Colorado. USC has both won and lost in the final seconds lately, and sophomore safety Sua Cravens wants his team to play well enough where those final minutes won't matter.
We need to work, we need to finish, and we need to be disciplined. And I think that's where a lot of our mistakes come from being undisciplined.
While USC has won all eight of their meetings against Colorado, the Buffaloes' passing game could make things interesting, especially because of USC's struggles defending the pass. But Trojan defensive coordinator Justin Wilcox feels that his defense will be up to this challenge. A return to the Coliseum could restart the charge of the number 22 ranked team in the country. Shockingly, home teams are just 4-14 against Pac-12 foes this season, so anything is really possible when these teams kick off. That starts Saturday at 3 o'clock on the Pac-12 networks. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Nia Frank, Nicole Herp, and Selena Say Reynolds. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Logan Healy is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. From all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Priyanka Deo.